Hey there, skips and skipperettes from all across the vast electronic wasteland known only as Internet Land, and welcome back to Tales from the Jungle Cruise. Man, I really need to do an Internet Land t-shirt. That thing idea has been kicking around for a while. Boy, a whole lot of stuff in the last 2 weeks. Hi, how are you guys doing? That's good, thanks. That sounds great. Are you having a good time out there? Well, we just got back from our first Walt Disney World trip in 11 years. Got to go to an amazing get-together with a ton of skips from the 80s and 90s. It was super fun, and we made lots of contacts who will be appearing with us here on the podcast. We are super excited about that. I have lots and lots to report about our Walt Disney World trip, but this episode you are listening to today is not quite long enough to split in two, but much longer than I could really put an Orlando story in front of. So I'm just going to do a standalone episode about my trip, probably next week. That way it's easier to skip if the thought of me babbling on my own for 30 minutes turns your stomach. It's been a full year since the last time that I sat down with anyone that I actually worked with myself. But this one is special enough to anyone who worked from about 2003 to 2012 in the jungle. For those of you who have not yet had the pleasure of making the acquaintance of Skipper Andrew Peterson, well, you're about to. Enough about that, am I right? I guess. Let me give it some more context. Andrew is a really nice guy. He would also hate that I'm telling you that, so be it. He's the sort of chap that everyone thinks how great of a cast member he is without even giving it a second thought. Genuinely, he's a skipper that a lot of us admire, as a few months ago he found his time with Disney was over, which makes him fair game for appearing here in all of his podcast glory. So that aside, a brief disclaimer, Andrew and I had some time and location restrictions that we could not get around. We weren't able to get a quiet room, and we weren't able to roam around a bunch to find a spot. We did find a place without background music, but we were totally set upon by midget humans intent on making tons of background noise. Now, I have done what I can to minimize this, but I also understand it's one of our messiest episodes of audio quality for a while. I offer my apologies, but there are some circumstances surrounding Andrew's appearance that made it necessary and unavoidable. Plus, I'm sure that many of you have actually heard our show before and understand that sometimes we have to take what we can get for recording locations. All right, done with that. Thank you for sticking with us. All right, here we go, everyone. Season 6, Episode 9, as we present our conversation with the illustrious Skipper Andrew Peterson in an episode we like to call Adult Onset Adultness. Kungaloosh, everyone. Because I'm sure you heard, I don't know, the first season when we had Benny and Kaz on the show. Part of the interesting part, it took me a year to figure out really how to run the microphone.
Gotcha.
Because we made the mistake of recording at the Grand Californian and on the back fireplace.
Okay.
So we're sitting there like you and I are right now and not realizing that the microphone was pointed directly at a fan. And I was not sufficiently savvy enough at that point to have the headphones in so I could hear those things.
Check your levels.
Yeah, and I had the gain too high. So the first two episodes, unfortunately, great on content. They spawned the idea for this entire thing.
Right.
Nearly unrecognizable. And it's a shame because one of the great stories we talked about was 9/11.
Oh,
And how the jungle really came together. On that level. So, yeah, it's been a strange 6 years.
I can imagine.
Hard to believe that it's been six years of doing
long.
The podcast.
Yeah.
So, for the people who are out there in listener land, Andrew Peterson and I, Skipper Andrew, we are sitting here plotting the mass destruction of children in the only moderately quiet
spot we could find.
I wouldn't say it's a mass destruction. There's only like five of them.
That is true.
There's still plenty of other kids out there.
Elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
It's like Lay's, you know. Crunch all you want, we'll make more.
Exactly.
Wasn't that Leno? It was Leno that did that.
I think so.
So we're hanging out at the historic Anaheim packing house.
Dating all the way back to about a year ago.
Yep.
So,
well, the building's older.
But true. Yes,
it is pretty much the hipster capital of Anaheim.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you're looking for an overpriced popsicle,
this is your place.
So, I'm still trying to decide if this is going to... I think it's going to work. I think I can get most of the kid noise. As long as we don't have aggressive screaming.
Again, so there's still a while to go. So
when you garrote them, go low.
Right.
Make sure there's no airflow.
See,
screams.
I was going to go for the throat to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, cut it off right at the...
At the source.
At the source, yeah.
Awesome. A little closer to you since I think I'm a little... Imagine that. I'm a little louder than you are.
Go figure.
So, Andrew, we work together.
We did.
That is the rumor.
Oh.
We did for quite some time.
Is that what people say?
Yes. When did you begin your fatal attraction to the mouse?
Are we talking working there, or are we talking about the other thing?
Cooking them.
Because I'm really not supposed to talk
with
about
Glenn
that
Close
yet.
And yeah. Michael Douglas. Yeah. And...
No, I actually started at the jungle in summer of 2004. So I was there up until...
That was a good vintage. 04 was a good vintage.
It was a great year. That 04 to 05 was probably my favorite summer. Like the, you know, everybody has that summer, their summer, and that was...
It seems like I have said that a few times.
Just a few, right? But there was a great group there because we did have a big crop of new kids kind of coming in, but there was still a lot of the veterans around to kind of knock us around, keep us in our proper place. Yep.
I think they're reacting to us with louder noise.
I think
the more that we're focused, the more they're turning up there.
It seems like it. Yeah.
British enthusiasm. It's all right. I've recorded worse episodes.
Yeah, well, we're just starting. Yeah. You don't know how bad this is going to be.
Adam Tyler and I recorded in Temecula.
Okay, and first of all, there's a bad thing to begin with.
You're right, Adam's a horrible human being. But we're in the middle of recording, and a motorcycle rally broke out.
Excellent. Just broke out. It wasn't planned. It just kind of
there. We were there,
happened.
And then suddenly there was 100 Harleys going up and down Main Street Temecula.
Fantastic.
And that episode was a real joy to edit.
I can only imagine.
It's actually entitled on the podcast, Episodes or Adventures in Editing.
That seems apt.
So, yeah, so 04,
yes.
There were many good people.
A lot of great people.
I think I've been there about a year-ish.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And so that me and Greg Riley and...
Oh, Greg, yep.
So who trained you? Who was your...
My trainer was Brian Ellis, believe it or not. I know he didn't train for too long at the jungle, but I was one of the rare trainees, yes.
So, I mean, I think that there's a number of consistent things that bring people to work at Disney, but I always like to check in on what was the siren's call for you? What was
desperation? No, I'm just kidding. Believe it or not, again, it's one of those kind of destiny type of things.
Ironic foreshadowing.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. No, I had actually been working as an editor at my school newspaper the year before, and it was right before the Tower of Terror first opened. And so they were trying to promote that, so they sent out invitations to the opening with a press pack. And I got that, got all the stuff out, and hung on to the envelope for some reason. And as I was finishing up my academic career, my mom started asking, so what are you going to do school-wise? And I had, or work-wise, sorry, and I had no idea. So she sent up, like, applications for a bunch of places near us, back home, Barnes & Noble, Borders, things like that. And I sent them back to her, and of course I used the cheap, free envelope that I had, which, coincidentally, I had somehow accidentally left in the card from Disney Recruiting. And so she called me up after she got it and said, well, what do you want me to do with this? And I said, oh, that was just left in there. She said, I think you should apply, because I was an annual pass holder at the time, so I was paying to be there. She said, you should probably pay so that they have you there. And I said, okay, went in and got hired right away. Yeah. So, but I had wanted to be a Jungle Cruise skipper since I was 4 years old.
What was, I mean, was it... Was the dashing costumes or the...
Well, they were pretty spectacular, but I think it was just the... Wait, these guys are telling really bad jokes and people are liking it. People are laughing at them. I like this.
Well, and I...
With them, not at them. They laughed at me. They,
yeah. I my recollection of 04 was that you your sense of humor fit in almost immediately. Because I want to say corny is... You were good with... The jokes that were a little stale.
I can do that, yeah. Yeah, I could.
dry sense of humor on a wet river?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, the funny thing about it is I consider myself more of a writer rather than a performer like that. So I would get a lot of comments from people, even other skippers who were like, oh my gosh, it's crazy. I never know what I'm going to hear on your boat. And I would look at them kind of wondering... Because I generally did the same trip most times because I liked knowing what I was going to say, knowing what was going into it. I wasn't a whole lot of the improvisational skippers that we had some great ones at the time.
Yep.
But I wasn't really in that camp. But I would hear that a fair amount was, oh my gosh, I never know what I'm going to hear, what you're going to say. And I'm like, I would throw out things occasionally. But for the most part, if you rode my boat two or three times... You knew what you were in for, so that always kind of intrigued me. Like, I don't know what people thought they were hearing, but
I'm trying to think if my Audacity has a filter for remove loud children. Maybe
I think it's called a stick.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
So no, and that's you know, because I was kind of on that the. I've often said that one of my earliest regrets at Jungle, my very few regrets, is that I was one of the first people to play loose with the script in the spirit of the Jungle. I never did anything that was, you know, out of period. I tried
not to do the anachronistic type
but
stuff.
I would try to find interesting puns or turn a phrase in an interesting way. And I do wish I'd played it straighter because I would have actually liked to finish in the point where I could have been a trainer and
played the good boy.
Yeah, well, not good, but not, better.
Well,
a better.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed, you know, your script. What was did you have that sense of awe when you came in for training and all that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'd had an annual pass for years coming into it, so I felt like I was pretty familiar with the script to begin with, but to actually be there and holding the microphone even during training was so exciting. Yeah. Like,
but I mean, were you outgoing at all? I mean, I kind of sense that dichotomy. You know, we've often discussed your great hatred of people.
Right. Yes, I hate everyone equally. But no, there definitely was, because I have done the performing thing and I enjoy it. I do get a buzz off that and everything, but I also like having a bit of a net of knowing what I'm going to say. There won't be the empty moments of awkward silence like I'm sure the listeners are experiencing throughout this podcast today. But I like getting the immediate reaction, but I also like having a security of knowing where I'm headed for the most part.
Is there stuff from your spiel and from your jungle days that stand out with you, from you as things that you you enjoyed contributing on the writing side, or?
Well, nothing ever got approved, so big surprise there. I tend to write a little more darkly than they're particularly looking for.
That, my problem was I wrote a little too smart.
You can't
write smart.
No, you got to play lowest common denominator for the most part.
6-year-old kid. 6-year-old kid has to get it otherwise.
Exactly. 6-year-old kid. And that's why a lot of the kind of pop culture things I tried to steer away from too, because grandma isn't going to get those. You know, not everybody is going to be up on the latest movie, who, you know, the musicians of the day are, things like that. So it's not, and I don't want to leave anybody out in my humor. So I tried to go kind of broad, but yeah, I tended to play a little smarter than probably was smart with some of the jokes. But
do you remember who your training buddy was?
It was a girl named Katie. Mm-hmm. She was there for the summer. Then I believe she went to like South America with the Peace Corps, and then came back occasionally as a CT for about a year or so afterwards.
That's impressive.
Yeah, she was cool. We had a good time.
So any from those early days, you know, any momentous moments in your early jungle history that stick out?
100%. My very first night there, I somehow managed, it wasn't my fault, supposedly, but to double derail and have my boat face the trap safari, which is quite an accomplishment, because that means that the nose of the boat was pointing directly at the rhino and the safari on the totem pole.
That's impressive.
Yeah, what had happened, I guess, was there is a piece of track in that particular spot that is removable so that they can drive trucks in and out during any refurb or projects like that they needed to work on. And I guess it had somehow come loose, or they hadn't secured it.
On
well
your
enough.
First day?
On my first day.
Were you crying behind the captain's crate at that
I
point?
Was real close. I was really close. I had no idea what to do. I mean...
Yeah, well, and you've just gone through training and are told that if you derail in the S-curve, you're fired.
Right, and I was very close to that. I was within mere feet of that. However, it was the one and only time that I was able to use the air horn to signal back to the dock.
Oh, I don't miss the air horns.
Oh, absolutely not.
Gorgeous.
Guns are so much more fun.
Yeah. Well, it's good that, you know, once you got the divers out there to, you know, to certify that it wasn't your fault. It's probably
that was the most wonderful moment of that entire day, because I was scared that I would be handing in my ID as soon as the boat came back around to the dock.
There's nothing like first day being fired.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that would be a pretty decent accomplishment.
I probably wouldn't have you on a podcast at that point, so...
I don't know. I would have a heck of a first day story.
Yes, and a great last day story, too.
Yes. Very similar.
Yes, bracketed well.
Yes.
What was the reaction from... Were the leads...
It was... I can't remember his last name right now, but Scott...
Oh, no, Scott Nelson.
Scott Nelson. It was Scott Nelson was the lead.
Scotty McCotty.
And he was always very laid back and very cool. So he handled it very nicely, very well. It wasn't, you know, fear of God being put in.
Oh, yeah.
Go up to the office, you know, and wait for doomsday. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. A boat full of guests about 5-6 o'clock at night.
Did they evac through the safari, or how'd they get them out?
Boat to boat.
Okay.
They did a boat to boat, so we tied two boats together, and they kind of got to hop between two boats. So I'm sure they have some fun
great
memories.
Stories. I'm sure it's on video somewhere. That's all.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Look at this idiot! Look what he did! But we got to jump from boats, so that works.
I love. I have a YouTube Google search.
Uh-huh.
Anytime anyone uploads new Jungle Cruise videos, I get email notifications.
Oh, very cool.
And there's some great home videos. And I'm just... It's amazing that we don't have more of these mini disasters happening.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one thing. I'm kind of in the John Lasseter camp on this. I wish I had a video of one of my boats, and I don't, and I never had the foresight to... Assign somebody to do it for me.
I have one on tape at home that's on VHS.
Okay.
And Dave Casella did a recording one summer where he went through and recorded probably 20, 25 skippers.
Okay.
And I think I have a master copy that has all of them. I just haven't... wait for the fire truck to go by. I just haven't had time. I need to find the tape and get everything transferred over.
So. Yeah, that would be kind of a fun.
Well, that
piece
would
to
that
have,
would have been like '03, '04 would have been right in the middle. You would know everyone.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So
and would have just missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's funny that as the 6 years roll by, one of the reasons why I mean, we stayed in touch because we're friends.
Right.
But many people who've been on the show who worked with you all repeated the statement that you know how to tell a story well.
Oh, wow.
Everyone has said it's a high bar.
They're clearly lying.
Yes.
Very clearly. You have a lot of liars amongst your guests.
So so you started in 04 and you left in 2014?
I ended up leaving the company officially, actually, this past September.
Okay,
so 2016.
So 12 years of association with the...
Yes. Yes.
So I'm sure that during that time you learned other attractions.
I did, yeah. I also did Tiki Room, Indiana Jones, and Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
So, I mean, of the experience, I mean, if you had the choice, would it have been Jungle every day? I mean, I'm sure everyone enjoys the other attractions, but...
Sure. Well, it would have for a considerable period of time.
Yeah.
Not necessarily forever.
Yeah. You have to take a break, too.
I mean, exactly. And it's nice to get a little bit of variety in there. And then, like we were saying before we started recording, it's a little different than what I came into. And being a crotchety old man, I don't like change. So,
Look, when you came in, you were in your 20s and you were a crotchety old man.
This is very true.
Yeah.
I've had full-grown adults. At 20, I was a full-grown adult. But I've had...
Adult-onset adultness.
Yes. I've had adults who are significantly older than me who have told me that I act significantly older than they do, in all seriousness. And, yeah, I very much don't want kids on my lawn and that sort of thing. Change scares me. Yeah. What is this technology that we're doing?
This internet, this tweet.
Internetting, yeah. I don't know about that.
That's the big difference is that, you know, I mean, we didn't have kids with cell phone cameras recording our spiels.
Well, that's 100% it, yeah. And there weren't as many websites and, you know, Instagrams and things like that. Wow, that sounded really old.
Well,
so many Instagrams and... televisions.
I mean, when I was growing up, an Instagram was just what you went behind the 7-Eleven to get when your dealer was there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But it came real quick, so that was good. But yeah, the explosion of social media and everybody feeling the need to kind of document everything.
Sure.
And then you look back at the first, I mean, I'll even say, wow, the first, I'll even say like 50 years of the park, and there's almost nothing recorded with a lot of the old-timers, which is one of the neat things about this podcast, is you're getting a lot of the oral history down.
And we've gotten lucky to have some guys on from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every time there's a new Kodachrome movie that comes, that is found in a basement or something, it's wonderful now because it gets digitized and put up on YouTube.
Exactly. Where everybody can enjoy it, and it's not just sitting in your grandma's basement getting, water damage and all that.
In case you missed it, it was the only boy of the group pouring chocolate sauce on the heads of the girls.
Phenomenal.
Oh, to be young and stupid.
And covered in chocolate.
And covered in chocolate. Mm. I was, you know, I've been old and covered in chocolate a few times. But that's
right.
A much better
experience. Valentine's Day is coming, so. There's an idea for all you folks out there.
Yes. Just, and when you find your special love of your life and pour chocolate on them, it's always best to give them no warning at all, and do it in as public of a place as possible. So just a little tips, love tips.
Love tip, yeah.
I mean, what else did you see in that time? Because there are relatively few people who work at the park for that extended length of time. I mean, you know, it's been around for 60 years, but 10 years is still a pretty good stretch.
It's a decent chunk. Yeah, I used my degree to a fine extent there. I mean, I love doing it, and one of the most exciting things, especially in the early days, was. That fall, we actually got the guns back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a big deal for us. I remember being at the jungle the very first day after we had all gotten our firearm training and everything. And 90% of the guests were absolutely thrilled that we had these guns back. And then you got that 10% who wasn't quite so sure, and I actually
didn't know we had guns, because they had started coming when the air horns.
Uh-huh.
And then they suddenly show up one day and there's guns, and they don't get what it's about.
Yes. It's the hippos in the trees, of course. But I actually had guests that would grab my arm as I was lifting the gun above the canopy, and it's like, you know, that might not be the best idea, because we're lifting it this high and putting it above the canopy to kind of dull the noise a little bit. You might not want this right next to your ear, but they were, there was kind of a vocal minority that weren't especially thrilled about it, but like I said, about 90% cheered every time that gun came out.
Well, and I still will not say who was involved in this, but when I rehired for the second time,
yes,
the firearm training was a armor hot dog that was rubber banded to the side of the boat, and the muzzle of the gun was placed against said hot dog, and said hot dog became a fine pink mist, and it was a very clear object lesson about what not to do with firearms.
That's legit. That is 100% legit.
I don't think that training technique is still in play, but it was...
I would imagine probably not, but does that illustrate don't screw around with these things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was old Nine Fingers.
Yeah, well... Yeah.
Shouldn't have brought that hot dog to work that day.
That was my lunch.
Yes. So any other magical memories that stand out for you in your early days?
The soccer referee whistle going on there. I mean, we just had so much fun back then. It was, like I said, a very different place than it's kind of become, because there was such an older cast of skippers still around, whereas that's not exactly the case these days. It's a lot of kind of younger skips, so there's not necessarily that veteran presence to kind of knock you around a little bit.
Yeah, but at the same, and this is one of the things I've heard, is that the other side effect, which is toward the benefit of the management, is because there aren't a lot of 5 and 10 year people. No one gets comfortable enough to be a bad example.
Yeah, that's true, but sometimes the bad examples are the most fun. I tend to find myself drawn to the bad examples.
Oh, I'm not at all saying that's a bad thing. It's just, you know.
But it was interesting, because when you would go out and you would screw up, or you would do something kind of against the spirit of the jungle, kind of that affected your crew, the rest of your crew, in a negative way, you didn't just necessarily hear about it from the lead. You would get it from 4 or 5 people, and that kind of got drilled into your head that, oh my gosh, I did something wrong. Kind of like the shooting the hot dog example, I don't want to do this again. This is not something that I want to have happen. Whereas now it's almost the opposite, where you screw up, and again, there's something to be said for, you know, working with kindness and just, hey, you messed up, but do it better next time. But it also doesn't necessarily have that same impact.
Sure. Well, I think that sense of ownership.
I think that's when
you have people who've been there for a long time. And there is both a plus and a minus about jungle ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's good, because everyone is kept to a standard by their coworkers.
Right.
But sometimes people take that way too far.
No, that's true. But, I mean, when you have... You know, there was a group of guys around at that time, you know, Sean Nelson, Don Warner, Mike Mayer, who were all good friends of mine, who would, you know, they would knock you around a little bit, but you knew it came from a good place. You knew that you were going to go hang out the next day and nothing was going to be said of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever it may be, unless it was, you know, oh, look at you. You bumped a boat, you crazy guy. Like, there wasn't the aggression. There wasn't a bad thing. But at the moment, you know, when it happens, I don't care who it is that's making it a bigger deal for you, you're going to remember. Even if it's your mom or your dad or...
But right, I think right now, I mean, the tolerance from the legal side has caused all of Disney attractions to really have a near zero tolerance for certain activities.
Absolutely.
Because right now the lawyers run the park, and that's the way it's always been, but we just really know it now.
Now we're noticing because it is such a litigious
society. Yeah, it's right on the surface.
Society.
It isn't hidden, you know.
Right,
now
we're not
going
to pretend. And,
well, we know that if Jungle's going down, so we have a rehab so the boats don't, you know, rock against the dock. We know that the base of that is a legal issue.
Exactly. We know that somebody did something stupid.
Or you just have a culture where, over time, there's a realization that this issue has to get addressed.
Yeah.
You know.
No, and I understand that, and I'm not saying that necessarily having people do a Tarzan swing in front of a boat, you know, across the river is always the wisest idea or anything like that. I'm certainly not saying that, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, a little bit of leeway, a little bit of what happens in the jungle stays in the jungle is not a bad thing either. Because
right.
that was literally the first thing that I was told on my first day of training.
Yep.
Was what happens here stays here. There are certain things that can't, but for 95% of the stuff, you take care of your own. And I was both the benefactor and... giver of that.
Well, and that's
in my time.
And I still say that that's a better thing than having every little small thing go upstairs.
Exactly.
You know, because then it's sense of ownership, and then there's, you know.
Yeah, the self-policing, self-governing system.
Which turns into self-loathing and,
right.
you know.
Self-loving.
Well,
on your breaks, at least.
Yeah. That was above Tropical Imports.
Yes. Oh, yeah. In that little shed.
The little electrical room.
Yeah.
So, do you feel like you have the best stories of guest encounters, celebrity encounters, and such at Jungle, or at Tiki, or Lincoln, or Indy? Like, where did you have the most interesting things happen to you?
That's a very good question, because they're very different types of guest stories. I've had fantastic experiences and stories at all of them, just in different versions. Jungle was probably the most interesting. Because, I mean, you'd get people who didn't know that the animals were fake. And we're talking, again, adult-onset adults that would freak out because, you know, the tiger was gonna come and get them.
Or squirt would pop up and they'd
be on
the other side of the boat
and not
know.
Yeah, and they would scream like a banshee.
I had a very reserved group of Japanese tourists who filled up most of a boat one time.
Mm-hmm.
And very quiet, like I don't think a single noise was made all the way through the elephant pool, and like just the dead quietest. And then Squirt came up the second time, and the shrieking,
because
it was just this amazing cacophony of surprise that was a beautiful thing.
Japanese tour groups were always great for screeching at Squirt. Another fun story I had was I had a boat full of Japanese tourists. And no English at all. Mm-hmm. So I literally went around the jungle and told them how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, making sure that as we passed Trader Sam and got within earshot of the dock, you know, where people could actually hear, I went back to the proper spiel. But they stood up and cheered at the end because,
mm-hmm. they're big
darn it,
I
was giving it my all, and yep. they absolutely love peanut butter and jelly.
The tone of guests, Lincoln is always, you know, there's never great stories at Lincoln.
They're more depressing there.
And once Sam Lewis left, it was all downhill from there.
I think that's kind of a across the board.
Yep.
But, like, you get a lot of people there who have very vivid memories of things that never happened.
Yes.
And...
I have not recounted Disney amnesia stories.
Oh, my gosh.
Or reverse amnesia.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny used to be in the park, and all kinds of fun stuff. And
no. Oh, yeah, there's some really great...
And at some point, you just have to surrender, because they're so fervent in, I saw this happened, I was there.
When I was six, Space Mountain had a loop
Uh-huh.
That's the one that I run into the most, is people yes. recall an upside-down loop inside Space Mountain. Mm-hmm. It's like Sinbad's movie where he's...
Yeah, the one that they just talked
about. That actually isn't really a movie, but like for some reason people have group, you know, reverse amnesia about it.
Or the spelling of Berenstain Bears yep. that they did the thing about.
Yep. But yeah. no, but it is... the loop inside space is one that I've heard probably yeah. at least half a dozen times.
Surprisingly prevalent is that one. And I don't know, maybe there was something online or a rumor at one point that that was going to happen.
Maybe they're six and they're just scared. It's their first time riding it and they're scared enough.
Yeah, a roller coaster means a loop, so that's clearly what's in there. I don't know.
Lincoln was, because we had a lot more of like people falling asleep during the show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, high school kids in the back row, which was a regular occurrence.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Sit in the dark for about 20 minutes. And yep. Yep.
Cast members in the back row. So the we always bounce across. I think we all have, after 10 years, we have celebrity stories.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So what were moments for you that were particularly interesting for you? For
Sarah McLachlan once offered me a pretzel.
Oh, she offered me a puppy. Yeah, I think sad eyes.
Yeah, yeah. It was very sad. And then Sally Struthers came by, and she started offering children. It was weird.
Wouldn't that be great if Sarah McLachlan actually walked around with a sack of puppies?
She would be my favorite person in the world.
Yeah. Are you a dog or cat person?
I like them both, but I am a dog person. Yeah. Lauren's very much a cat person.
Yep.
And we want to get a puppy and a kitten like at the same time, so they
grow up together, loving
exactly.
each other.
Exactly.
And then they go off on an incredible journey.
An incredible journey, yes. Fantastic.
Such a terrible.
She won't watch it because there's like a scene where the cat walks across a railroad bridge and it gives her anxiety every time.
Mm-hmm.
But
I will say, and I guess we have to address this. You do realize that you are perhaps the luckiest human being in existence because, you know, you've got pretty much the best girl that's out there. Lauren is...
She's not bad.
She's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Wouldn't trade her in for a box of Cracker Jacks.
No, though, if there was a sack of puppies, there may be a...
It might be a tough call.
Might be a discussion, at least, but...
She's a good one. And congratulations on finally tying the knot.
Well, thank you, thank you, yes.
Long time coming and very well deserved for the two of you guys.
Yeah, it was, but we did it in our time and we did it in our way. So
it's perfectly appropriate.
Yeah.
So other than Sarah McLachlan on the celebrity side,
yes.
Who else was? I mean, I think I've gone over my list so many times on the show, I can't even contribute anything new. Although after the jungle, I met Keegan-Michael Key at the Night of the Golden Globes.
Oh wow!
I was shooting it for Netflix, and I got to meet him. And he is an incredibly nice guy. And
he seems like it.
He has that charisma that fills a room, even if he's not being funny.
Gotcha.
Like
everyone
in the room is just knows he's there just, and is looking at him.
He's
been a normal dude, and yeah, he's just got that energy of being really charismatic.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
All right.
Well, one of my personal Disney highlights / life highlights was probably about a year in to my jungle tenure, and it was near the end of my shift one day, and rumor had it that Paul McCartney was in the park. And I am a huge, huge Beatles fan, particularly Paul. As a matter of fact, that night after my shift, my brother and I were going to drive to Vegas to the Paul McCartney concert the day after.
Yep.
So I'm sitting backstage, finishing up my last break, and all of a sudden the word comes to the jungle that Paul is coming here next. And I don't remember too much of what happened next. Immediately following that.
But there were some skippers passed out unconscious.
Well, I was told that they had never seen me look so pale, which is quite an accomplishment. And they had never seen me move so fast, which is not so much. But I sped my way out to the dock, and I went up to the lead at the time. I'm going to leave this a nameless lead because it still irritates me to this day. But I went up, and I said, please, is there any way I can take this boat? It would mean the world to me. I would love to take this boat. No, we're just doing regular rotation. That's what we always do. We don't make special accommodations for people who want to take special boats, which is absolutely not true, not even for the celebrity VIP guests. We arranged things for certain skippers who we knew that it would be a big deal to.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, no, whatever boat comes around, they're playing roulette just as much as we are. But I was able to load the boat when he came in. So I had him by the elbow and led him down into the boat. And as I'm doing it, he kind of looks at me and goes, "Oh, I'm going to fall in. I'm going to fall in." And I looked at him dead straight in the face and I said, "Sir, I will go into that river before you do and I will hold you up. There is no way you're going in." And he just started laughing and, you know, proceeded up to the front. But
he's, I will say, for someone of his age, it's remarkable how little he's aging.
So, yes.
You know, bathing in the blood of virgins or whatever they do,
whatever
has worked
he
out
did,
well.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing okay for himself, I think. And this is back when he was married to the shrew Heather Mills. And so she was there, too. Choose not to remember that particular part.
Yeah. The that would have been a pretty major one in any.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember people fighting when Slash came on.
Was he wearing the top hat?
He was not wearing the top hat. He was wearing a bandana or something. But people were still very incensed that they
could not
take
that boat. Well, you know, it's kind of fitting to take him out, but
because it's in the jungle, basically.
Right.
We had to draw that line.
You could say welcome to the jungle when he got in, and then he'd probably punch you in the mouth.
Possibly.
I might punch you in the mouth, actually.
That bad of a joke.
Yeah.
Anyone else who struck you? I mean, not struck you, literally.
Well, like Slash, when I made that welcome to the jungle joke. At jungle, not particularly, because, again, it was generally played kind of skipper roulette, so I didn't always wind up with a ton of them, and a lot of times it was after the fact I found out who they were. I'm not really good at placing people out of context.
Yep.
So even Sarah McLachlan, I literally had to wait till I got back to the dock
to know
and
who.
have another skipper freak out that I had taken that boat. And, oh my gosh, do you know who that was? Well, actually, I don't. Oh my gosh, it was. Oh, okay. So this.
Well, that was like the Joey Hurley one where I was getting in. It was at No Man's Land, and I climbed in over the front. I'm like, okay, I'm bumping you. Or I was bumping him out for whatever. And it was John Stamos and Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, nice.
And I think to this day he still holds a grudge against that. I don't know if he does or doesn't, if he remembers even, but I would.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be on a list of some sort. But over at the Tiki Room, to go back to the Beatles or Beatles-adjacent folks, I had one of the guest relations hosts come in while her guests were watching the show. And we used to do presentations for the Walk in Walt's Footsteps tour where we could help out, and they would present one of the original flowers from the Tiki Room show, and you would get to do some history. And if they liked you and you actually knew what you were talking about, you could give them a break and kind of do the presentation yourself. So I got to the point where they all knew that I actually enjoyed doing it. I liked telling the people the story and answering questions and stuff. So she came back and asked if I could do the presentation, hold the doors for a few minutes, because her guest was a big Tiki Room fan. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, who's your VIP guest? And she goes, the son of some musician, Danny something or other. And again, like I said, I'm a huge Beatle freak, so I immediately clicked and said, do you mean Donnie Harrison? George Harrison's kid? Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that. So we literally spent 15 minutes talking about the Tiki Room, giving the history, and he just really enjoyed that, and that was so cool for me to get to do that, because, again, I realize, you know, he's not George, but first of all, he looks like a miniature copy of him.
Yeah.
And he's a musician in his own right, so that was really cool for me to, again, have a Beatles adjacent.
Well, I guess I could one degree of Paul McCartney, too, because I had Michael Jackson in the Tiki Room.
There you go.
So I guess I'm one degree of Paul as well. So.
Yeah, though Michael is a pretty decent story in his own right.
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was an okay one.
Yeah, well.
One that I've told way too damn many times. So after 6 years, I ran out of celebrity stories to tell.
That's fair.
Only so many.
Hey, here's some stories we don't have.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, any other moments that if we're putting this down in the archives and annals of history,
yes,
you know, any other moments that you wish to preserve?
Yeah, one of my particular favorites was we had just had the Jungle Cruise Christmas party a night or two prior that had a white rhino gift exchange, and somehow I had wound up with a King Kong playset. The movie had just come out, so it was a kind of rubber King Kong mask with breakable plastic shackles. And for some reason, that particular night at Jungle, I felt that there may be a cause for my new toys to come out and play. So I had stashed it in my jacket, and as the night went on, the crowds kind of thin out, and we were able to take deadheads, you know, empty boats without guests, just to keep the boat flow going. And so you kind of take your time and relax and have a good time out there. And I decided this is the time. This is the time to play. So I took my boat around to the back of Schweitzer, and I could hear a boat coming up. And it was one of my good friends and favorite skippers, Don Warner, was coming around with a boat of guests. So I'm parked behind Schweitzer Falls, and I pull out the gorilla mask and put it on, and have the shackles on my wrist, and I just sit there and wait. And he pulls around, and he starts to do the Nile joke and notices that all of a sudden there's a gorilla in the boat waiting behind the Nile. So I start running back and forth up and down the boat, just screaming gorilla noise and things. And Don had a very distinctive laugh. Some would say kind of mule-like, but very, very distinctive. And all of a sudden, all you could hear from Schweitzer Falls to the end of the Nile was just him with the microphone down, just cracking up, mm-hmm. having no idea as to what had just happened. And the guests had seen it, too, and they were having a good time. They were laughing, too, but it was Don just rising above everyone that I can still hear it in my head, and it's one of my favorite stories with him. And
that's like Skipper Nick. Nick did not like when I rode his boat because he would occasionally break character, mm-hmm. and he would ride my boats, and he would start having a laughing fit. And I did have a tendency to break script when Nick was in the boat because I wanted to try to catch him. And
again, we were doing stuff for each other.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it's all about. Guests. Uh-huh. Who cares about guests?
Yeah. Oh, I would.
They're just there to keep the lights on.
That's exactly right. No, I would try to change up my load and unload spiel and get those guys to start laughing because that was a good way to break up the. Like I said, not every boat, but a lot of boats kind of following the same trajectory was, all right, well, yeah, I know I'm going to be doing the same things when I'm out there, but when I'm here, maybe I can play around a little bit. And they've heard the joke so many times that they can tell when there's a change to it, so so they start paying a little closer attention. Wait a second, that thing that you said real quick, oh, I get it now. And that was always my holy grail, was to get the other skippers to laugh.
Don was a good one.
Don was a great one, yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like, because you were with Disney for a long time.
Yes.
And you started at a relatively early age.
Yeah.
So
physically, mentally, I was,
You were already in your 50s
when
you started.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, do you feel, for having that much immersion in the water, to coin a phrase.
I was going to say, I never fell in the water, thank goodness. Yeah.
Did it seep into your core of being? I mean, when I think of you, I mean, I think of a quintessential skipper. I mean, for me, when I have you, hold you in my mind, it's very much, you know, that avatar of skipperdom. I mean, but do you feel like you came in that way, or do you feel like you, did Jungle become part of your being, or is it just you being you?
Well, yes. Yes to all of the above. I mean, as far as, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid and that sort of thing, I was already a pretty darn big Disney fan going into it. You know, I... I was a regular, not a regular in the park to the point that, oh, it's that guy again, or anything like that. But I was there a lot. I had, you know, I grew up on the movies. Always, I had a ton of them. I was always reading stuff online in the early stages of the Disney fan sites and things like that. So I was predisposed to buy into a lot of this stuff. But the longer I was there, and certainly with Jungle, like I said, it was my favorite thing when I was a kid. But I, it's the sense of ownership mm-hmm. that really was powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still feel that way today, and I haven't worked the Jungle in, you know, a couple years. Mm-hmm. And I still feel like, wait a second, this is mine. Don't mess around with it. Because this is not what I had, and I feel like it's mine, and I appreciate hearing the quintessential Avatar and all that.
Well, but
that
no,
nice
I mean,
stuff.
You're very, yeah, I mean you're very much. It's kind of that blend of respect and being a skipper is sometimes living on the edge of the rules with what we do and all that, but
oh,
still
sure.
staying within them, but being like on the edge of it.
Oh,
that's very much how I mean, I've always, you know, I respect
that's,
your ability
that's
to turn
the line
a phrase.
That I tend to walk, yeah. Did he go too far?
Yeah.
I guess we'll let him slide this time.
So
I live in the gray area.
And are there any, I mean, is there anyone else you want to give a shout out to that influenced you or was big for you at Jungle that you
oh,
feel like?
100%. When I first started, a couple weeks prior, my good friend Mikey Rosenbaum had hired in, and he was a great skipper. He wasn't there too long. I think probably only about 2 years or so, but he was absolutely insane. His boats were everything that mine were not. He was literally, you got on the boat, and not only did you not know what you were going to hear, you didn't know if you were going to make it back. He would do all kinds of crazy stuff. When we had the gold boat for the 50th anniversary, whenever he was in there, I remember, I believe, all the way from the Hippo Pool to Trader Sam, he would do the Willy Wonka boat song. He is an improv actor, and still to this day, so he was great on the improv, on the teasing, kind of making fun of guests, let's do this on the fly type of thing. So he didn't have a whole lot that was prepared, but what was great about him was I could come up with jokes that I knew wouldn't fit with my persona, with what the character, the story that I was portraying in the Jungle was, but it would work with him. So I could hand those over to him and see them, and I knew they'd land. I knew they'd be great. David Levy was another great one. He was another very dark, very dry skipper. In fact, when he ended up leaving the Jungle, he had been given the title of the meanest skipper in the Jungle at one point. And when he left, he passed that down to me. And so I
don't
kept
know if it was
that
passed down so much as, you know, naturally
inherited. Yeah. So that was a nice honor. But he, again, another great source of just kind of the dry, very kind of, wait, what did he just say? Okay, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lot of fun. I mean, the crew at that time was just fantastic. There were great influences all over. And in fact, my first year at the Jungle Awards banquet night, you know, where they have all the kind of made-up awards for the year and for the skippers and things, I was voted most likely to be seen at Jungle on his day off. Mm-hmm. Because I would. I'd come in and I'd ride boats. Because I wanted to see what other people could do. And I knew that there were a lot of skippers. Like I said, with Mikey, I couldn't pull off a lot of the things that he was doing, but it might leapfrog a concept for me or something. And there were some that I could kind of crib a little bit from and craft together my persona, my
delivery.
Story that I was going to be doing when I was out there. So that was really beneficial to me. You know, I'd try to come in and write a couple whenever I could to pick up on little things and nuances and delivery and whatever, just to try to make my presentation better.
So outside of of Disney and Lauren, the other true love of your life is, of course, baseball.
Yes, yes.
So here's the difficult, here's the question for you, just as a hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say that you could time travel back to last year.
Okay.
And you had a button in front of you that by pushing that button, you could make it so that Donald Trump lost the election and Hillary Clinton won.
Okay.
But in pushing that button, the Cubs would lose the World Series in four. Would you push the button?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I will take the hate mail that comes with that. But absolutely not.
Tell us of your Cubs love, my friend.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I kind of like my Cubs a little bit. To the point of leaving Southern California in January to go to the Cubs convention in frozen Chicago.
By the way, thank goodness you didn't go to the Cubs Scouts convention by accident, because that would have been awkward.
Well, I couldn't get within 100 feet of the Cubs Scout convention. That's a whole different...
A little restraining situation there.
Yeah, yeah. We'll say it was personal restraint. Some people will say it was state restraint. I don't know. But... But no, I love the Cubs. My mom grew up in Chicago. My grandpa was a huge Cubs fan, so I grew up watching the games on WGN. Fell in love with the team. Have been hopelessly devoted ever since. Have taken years and years and years of slings and arrows of peers and, you know, anyone who happens to see me in my Cubs apparel. And they can't do that anymore. And I am so, so happy for that. So, so happy. It was a wonderful, wonderful October. It was a wonderful, wonderful year. And I've often said, kind of in the same vein as the button question, I would trade grievous personal harm for what happened and not look back.
So. Well, no, it's... I mean, look, it's... you have nothing but admiration on my side for what they were able to do. That's no argument from my side about that.
Yeah.
So, I would have to say that in most relationships, I wouldn't doubt that your love for your wife would rival the love for anything else. But the Lauren should be worried. If the Cubs ever propositioned you, I think there might be some concern there.
Something along those lines may have been mentioned in the proposal. I don't know.
I love you unless there's nine men who want me.
And that's exactly right. I have very loudly professed my love for the Cubs in no uncertain terms, like the individual players.
Yeah. What was your highlight from the Cubs convention?
Meeting David Grandpa Ross. We got to meet him through some very fortunate circumstances that we stumbled ass backwards into, and we were actually at the very front of his line after there were other people in the line who had literally been camping out there since 11 p.m. the night before. And we were able to meet him, and he was just absolutely wonderful and great with all the fans that we were able to see, and that was just incredible. And he is a mutual loved Cub between both Lauren and myself, so it was huge that we were able to get our moment with him.
Congratulations on so many fronts.
Thank you. You
know, and the Disney community that I know that there are many there who hold you in great regard, and I know that you're missed. So
lots of people with poor taste. Yeah.
Well, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, I guess. They must be thinking of somebody else.
Yeah. Oh, that Andrew.
That? Oh, no.
Oh, we thought you were about Andy McGuire.
Yeah, that guy.
That one.
Speaking of, in back of Andy Maguire, it was also his last night as a lead, the night that I double derailed.
Mm-hmm.
So he got to experience that a little bit. I feel like I made life a little spicier.
You ruined the day for everyone, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, you sound like my parents. but yeah.
All right, so last minute, anyone else you want to give some love to?
This really seems like you're trying to get me to say you.
No. We already did that.
Kyle is wonderful. It was fantastic getting to know him in the Jungle Cruise.
No, not me. I'm just giving you a chance because, you know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
You get one chance to come on the show. Unless you're Mike Robles, you only get one chance to be on the show.
No, I worked with a lot of great people. Like I said, Sean Nelson, Don Warner, my friend Tammy, now Anderson, who was a great friend during those early days at Jungle when, you know, you do feel kind of lonely when you're first starting out. Mm-hmm. And you don't really know anybody. So she was one of my really good friends early on. And she, along with Mikey, we kind of became a Three Musketeers, Three Amigos kind of group for our time at the Jungle. And that's something I do miss a little bit because everybody's kind of moved on and are doing their thing. But yeah, I'm not going to forget those early days and the fun that we did have. So.
Well, good. Well, that's good stuff. I mean, I'm glad that you had the time to take, and I'm glad you're not employed by Disney anymore is what I'm saying, because I couldn't have this conversation if you were.
Yeah, so congratulations. I probably couldn't say
that.
Half the thing.
So. That's always a tough thing is, you know, that we would love to... love to have more people on, but you know, we try to respect the NDAs and Disney legal. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, and again, there's only so much you can say. And
there will always be that the secondary veil behind the curtain that we can't lift, because there are certain things that will remain a mystery in the fraternity of Jungle Brothers.
As they should, yeah.
So.
We don't need the... what was he? The masked magician or whatever that used to have the... paper bag over his head.
Oh, the Unknown Comic.
Unknown Comic, that's it. Yeah.
So well, I was a huge Gong Show fan growing up, so.
Well, there we go.
And Match Game, too.
Match Game, you know what? I have spent far too much of my life watching Match Game. It is one of my favorite things out there. Mm-hmm. Brett Summers for the win.
Well, and I actually really like what Alec Baldwin is doing with the reboot.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's on Hulu, and it is
excellent.
Extremely good. They don't have the rotating cast. They don't have the Charles
kind of
Nelson
mystery.
Reilly, Brett Summers-esque. They rotate all six.
Okay.
But there's been some really standout. Wayne Brady's been on a few times.
Oh, he's good. Yeah.
Jason Alexander a few times. Mm. So it's been a good group
I will
of
definitely have to check that out because I love Match Game. I spent a lot of time on Game Show Network.
I just put the Behind the Blank episode up on Facebook.
Excellent.
So I'll link you to that. Make sure you get a chance to see it. So
excellent.
So, all right, everyone out there in internet land, thanks for hanging with us. We appreciate your perseverance through the storm of loud children that we had to endure. I should have hit the record button. Damn it.
Oh,
I missed that whole.
But you know what? Now there won't be any evidence about what happened to the kids, so we're in good shape.
All right, everybody. Check us out online, facebook.com/junglecruise, CREWS. If you are a skipper or know a skipper who would like to appear or at least have your voice appear on the show, drop us an email, junglecruisecrews@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone. You guys are great to hang out with, as always, and Kungaloosh.